The UFC returns to Nashville, Tennessee this weekend for a show that should be pretty fun. Ronda Rousey's getting married, and we talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs. That's right. It's a basketball edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out, and it starts now. Welcome back, everyone. Episode 64 of Josh Nason's Punch-Out is here. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, podcaster for the site. It is Friday, April 21st, 2017. Hopefully you guys survive 420 okay. Didn't read too many Diaz memes. I'm sure there's plenty out there today, or yesterday, rather. We are coming in on a very fun weekend of MMA. Hopefully you guys had a great week and are enjoying the weekend coming up. We are well into spring, and that means a UFC from Nashville. No, it really doesn't, but you know, that's not the gateway to spring. But we do have a show in Nashville, Tennessee coming up on Saturday night, a show that a little bit maligned because of the main event, but actually, if you really look up and down the card, some interesting names and some fun stuff going on in this show. And I really get into it the more I looked at it. We talked about it on this very broadcast you're about to listen to here, joined by an old friend who has not been with us since January 2016. So he's a writer for USA Today. He's a writer for MMA Junkie and also a writer for Rolling Stone as well. He is the one and only Mike Bond. Mike and I talked for about 50 minutes about a variety of topics, ranging from obviously the UFC Nashville. We talked a little bit about some of the news of the week. And let's see, there was a fight fixing, I would say allegations, but things that kind of got brought up, I guess, from 17 months ago, really bizarre story. So we talked a little bit about that. And we also talked about his preference, if given the option between John Jones versus Daniel Cormier 2, or if he'd rather see DC versus Jimmy Manoa and a John Jones tune-up fight. So we talked a little bit about that. And also we talked about the NBA playoffs of all things. So if you're not a big fan of the NBA, you can skip past that. I believe it's 5 minutes or so at the beginning. So no hard feelings there. But I had him on the show. He does kind of cover the sport, so I kind of figured, well, might as well ask him a few questions about it while we're here. So, it's a 50-minute interview. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Mike does a great job, as always, and we'll talk to you after the interview. So let's get to it with Mike Bond of MMA Junkie, USA Today, and Rolling Stone. Hit it. Well, we're going to welcome back an old friend, someone that talked to us in our first run of shows here last year or so, whenever it was. Let's see. He is a very talented writer for MMA Junkie and obviously for USA Today and obviously Rolling Stone as well, covering a variety of sports. He's the one and only Mike Bond. And Mike will, you know, as always, even though you're a past guest, I got to start you out with the really hard questions. And the first one is, do you expect to be invited to the wedding of Ronda Rousey and Travis Brown?
Definitely not, no. I would not count on that one, especially. I don't think Travis Brown is my biggest fan either. He did not like an interview I did with Derek Lewis ahead of their fight back in Halifax a couple of months ago, and he made that very clear to me. So I definitely am not expecting an invite to that wedding.
He didn't like an interview you did. What was like the questions you asked, or what was the
problem? I mean, I think there's still, I mean, understandably so, the whole domestic violence issue that came up with him that, must be noted, of course, it was dismissed. The UFC did their investigation, nothing was proved, the claims about him doing that. But I just think, Derek Lewis was making it part of the narrative going into that fight. And more or less just asked, he said a lot of things. I believe Derek has like a history. I believe his parent, his father did some unsavory things to his mother, and he was kind of a witness to that as a kid. So I think he was making it part of the narrative leading into that fight, saying a lot of, not too nice things about Travis's past. And I just kind of asked if that was fight talk or if he really meant it. And I think Travis caught wind of that, and he wasn't too fond because Derek more or less doubled down on it. So I understand coming from Travis's position, but we're just trying to do our jobs here, ask the questions that people want to hear. So yeah, it is what it is. I mean, not the first time a fighter or a camp has been unhappy with questions or interviews or content that's being put out, and I guarantee it won't be the last time either. So it's all good. But yeah, congratulations to the two of them. But I'm not expecting an invite to that.
Yeah. It's have you ever had situations where you know, you'll go to cover an event and you'll talk to some guys that are unhappy about stuff, and they kind of are. Are they different in person than they are online when they show their displeasure? Or how does that usually come across to you?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly haven't had too many bad experiences. And if there has been some, more often than not, it's kind of been with like the UFC, like maybe the PR staff is unhappy about something here and there. And I think we've all had experiences with that. If you know, are in the game long enough and you've done enough work and visited enough events. But yeah, usually, I mean, people... you do talk to about a person. Like, I remember one time Donald Cerrone wasn't too happy with like a Conor McGregor story that I wrote when he kind of talked some trash about Conor, and he sent me a pretty angry text message one time. And then when we actually saw each other in person, there was absolutely no hard feelings whatsoever. I don't even think he remembered it. So it's, yeah, it kind of just depends. I think a lot of these fighters, we know that they're very sensitive, which is kind of an interesting contrast considering they're some of the toughest, you know, most amazing athletes in the world, and they go out there and do what they do, but then they see an article or a tweet by whomever, not just me, and they get very sensitive to it. So it's just the reality of the situation. I can understand, you know, when you are that much in the public eye and you have people writing stories about this and that, and I can understand where they're coming from, but they also need to understand their position as athletes and the job of the media, and that they're trying to do their jobs as well.
Yeah, I would chalk that up too a lot to the fact that the sport is still relatively young when it comes to that stuff. And I think that, you know, and I want to ask you about the contrast to basketball, because obviously you've talked to, you know, NBA people and players and all that stuff. And, you know, there is a difference when I think you're day in and day out covered by the ESPNs of the world and in, you know, the FS1s of the world and just your local beat writers. And you're kind of used to that year after year after year after year. If you become obviously a bigger star in the NBA, you know, like your LeBron James and your Kobe Bryant's and just your upper echelon stars, you tend to cross over into other, you know, other types of media covers you as well. Like, you know, your pop media, mainstream media and things like that. So they're kind of used to it. But MMA fighters, I mean, it's like completely different. It's just a completely different world to them. I think they're kind of still getting used to this whole being in the media eye and things like that. Have you seen any – one thing I know when I started, because I worked in hockey for 7 years, and I noticed a lot of parallels between when I would interview guys and hockey players early on. They were just very – you know, a little bit more humility and really not very polished when it came to media, but willing to kind of talk about anything. And once you kind of broke through the ice, so to speak, have you noticed that any similarities between that and, say, NBA guys and personnel you've talked to, or is it two completely different worlds?
Yeah, I think it's pretty different just because you see people in the NBA, they get proper media training. I think that's part of the entire process from after you're drafted and, you know, going through, I think it's a year after year thing. And I think the UFC is like kind of trying stuff like that by like bringing the fighters in and doing those big fighter summits that they do in Las Vegas and, you know, bringing in some social media people and just, but it's not like the exact hands-on type of training that you would get probably, you know, in the NHL, NBA, NFL, all those different things. So they need to understand. And it's just, I think it's very different as well, because in like the NBA, there is so much availability with these people. Like, it's, they have stuff after practices every time, pregame, postgame. Like, there's so much availability that I think to have them, like, just the news cycle is a little bit different. Like, it, obviously it's an individual sport and a team sport. So I think that's a different contrast as well. So I just think with MMA, it's a lot different in the sense that these fighters, in order to really get yourself out there and, you know, break out of the shell of just being just one of the 500 plus fighters on the UFC roster or Bellator or whatever it may be, you really need to put yourself out there more and like show more personal side and more personality in your interviews if you want to get the same traction. It's not just like an NBA where if you're, you know, the best player on the team, you're going to get, the media are going to flock to you even if you're the most boring person in the world. It's just the way that it goes. Like, your actual success is something that the media revolves around a lot more than, you know, Twitter beefs or these kind of things that we focus on in MMA.
Yep, I would agree. So let's actually, I want to ask you about the NBA because the playoffs are going on right now. We're recording this on Thursday night. action is happening as we speak. And from your, I guess, from your background and obviously your interest in the NBA and working on it, I mean, we kind of look at these different brackets, and you know, it's interesting. There's going into this playoffs, there's so many different interesting stories, right? I mean, there's the Golden State angle, there's the James Harden, Russell Westbrook angle going in. San Antonio still really consistent going out on the in the West. And then the East is improving compared to where it's been years past. Obviously, the Celtics, number one seed, but we see where that's going. The Wizards are a force for sure. Very interesting team there. Obviously, the Toronto Raptors making a lot of moves this during the regular season at the trading deadline to kind of bulk up their roster, playing against a very very athletic, young, kind of upstart Bucks team. And then you have the Cleveland Cavaliers, kind of the old guard doing their thing and all that. So I was curious kind of what your thoughts were going into the playoffs, and now that we're a couple games in, what are you thinking so far?
Yeah, it's been fun. I mean, I've only been covering the NBA really like full time for the past two seasons or so. But of course, I played basketball as a kid. I've been very, you know, following the sport pretty passionately since I was pretty young. And in my opinion, this season has been absolutely nuts. Like, there's not many seasons previous that compare to all the storylines, just all the amazing accomplishments and moments that have happened throughout the season. It's really just become very fascinating. I think for a long time, like with the NBA, it was just really looking forward to the postseason, regular season. It was just kind of a jaunt trying to get through those 82 games. But now, like, the regular season has become just as big of a thing as almost the playoffs in a way. Not, of course, like the same type of stakes, but you just see the way they're able to push like the Christmas Day games and just all these like Thanksgiving games and all these different things. It's just really taken on a new life in its own. And it's really enjoyable to cover it in that way. And I think the media, the way that the sport is covered now is absolutely amazing. I think it feels like it's every single day a new story comes out from whether it's ESPN, Yahoo, The Vertical, whatever, all these different outlets. That's just like a knock your socks off type of well-written, awesome article. And you're seeing a lot of that stuff. So I think the NBA media is at a pretty high level right now. And just this season, they've done a really good job as a whole covering everything that's going on. And I think that's going to continue through these playoffs, which are, like you said, I think you did a good, really good job of kind of breaking down all the top teams there and all the interesting things going on. So I think it's just going to be interesting to follow. I mean, I think there's some definite concern right now in Toronto with how these Raptors are doing. I think as we speak, the Raptors are down, you know, nearly 30 points against the Bucks in game three. So these Raptors have been pretty shaky all season. I feel like they did end up with that third seed. They had a 51 win season, but still it was just a lot of concerning parts. I think a lot of people were a lot more confident in what they're capable of doing last year when they made it to the conference finals. And just last thing on this, because I'm sure we'll want to move on more to MMA stuff, but yeah, like, how can you not be absolutely devastated with what's going on with the Celtics right now? I mean, Isaiah Thomas puts in a probably top five, top six season out of anyone in the league. They get that number one seed, just overachievers. I think a lot of people thought that when the, you know, post Rondo, Garnett, Allen, Pierce era left, it was going to take quite a while for them to get back on their feet, and they've overaccomplished every year. And this year was amazing. And of course, one day before the playoffs start, Isaiah Thomas's sister is, you know, killed tragically in a car accident. And I just couldn't imagine what that does to not only him, but the entire team as a whole. And I don't know if you can really say that's the primary thing to them being down 0-2 right now to the Chicago Bulls, but it's hard to really dismiss that narrative. It's very sad to see what happened there.
Yeah, I will say that I think everyone was surprised that the Celtics did not rally around that, use that as a rallying point to play harder and get a win. And these first two games, they have looked terrible. I mean, they've had certain runs, but I mean, this is a team that you said overachieved all season. And you know, I think the number one seed, I think kind of people knew there's a little bit of smoke and mirrors with this team. And I think there was, you know, every day here there is talk, and there has been, this has been for months, actually it's been for probably two seasons. The media here is not that well versed in the nuances of basketball, so they tend to just kind of go for the headlines first, and it's always the whole Trader Danny thing and trading draft picks and what are you going to do with this number one pick, and can you get Jimmy Butler, basically any guy in the league, can you get them? Not really coming from an educated, you know, standpoint. Well, once you got to learn about this and listen to other writers, other cities and experts and so on, sometimes these guys just are simply not available, right? So I think the big thing with the Celtics is they didn't really help out kind of the middle part of their roster, and you can only go so far with some of the talent they've had. They've got the most out of it. I worry if they get swept, or even if they get knocked out in five games, which seems to be leaning in that direction. You know, there was a lot of positive momentum going into potentially next season with, even if you lose against the Cavaliers, or, you know, in a very hard fought, or even get swept in like the Eastern Conference Finals, that still kind of helps that momentum going on for next year. If they get swept or five games, I think you got to make a few more changes than you probably planned on it, just to make sure you don't have that malaise from that season before. But having said all that, I think that no matter what, I think we're heading towards another Cleveland Golden State battle, unless a dark horse like San Antonio could pull something out. But I think that, you know, that best of three series, which, you know, it just seemed to be going into this, and Durant's healthy again, getting back into shape. It seems to be that's where the smart money is at, right?
Yeah, that's the moneymaker series. I'd be, with all the faults Cleveland's really even shown with on defense and just at the points throughout the season, I still think they're the best overall team and the most equipped to go to that NBA Finals. And if you are the NBA, you want that third showdown, that third consecutive showdown between the Cavaliers and the Warriors. That's where the ratings and all the money is and everything. I mean, it'd be nice to see if like another Eastern Conference team could somehow upset Cleveland and squeeze in there. But like right now, I just feel like a lot of people agree from day one that this was really Golden State's season, and for them to go and win that championship, I just think like that's why you didn't see some of these teams make like insanely aggressive moves at the trade deadline and stuff like that, because I think they were a little bit aware like maybe let's keep our cards closer until the off season into next year and just see what we can do there, because right now, I mean, that Golden State team is looking absolutely unstoppable. It doesn't really, in my opinion, matter who they meet in that conference or the NBA Finals. I think this is their season.
Yep, I would agree. And one thing you mentioned about the NBA, we'll kind of transition to MMA. You know, I'm always impressed by, and you talked about, you know, the media and just the sport itself. They promote and make stars out of it doesn't matter where you are in the country or even in Canada as well. You can make a star anywhere, and they've done such a great job with, you know, the Greek Freak in Milwaukee and, you know, some of this talent in Toronto, and that no matter where you are, you feel like you know players on the team, and the media speaks very, very, glowingly about the league. You rarely hear negative issues about the league. There's no concern. I mean, the TV contract is there. The CBA is good. The players are getting paid. Players are getting paid amazing amounts of money, and these are guys
it's only going to go up for
it's the league is flush with cash. It's like tremendous. And you flip over to MMA and kind of looking at like this weekend, and there's not a lot of buzz for the show in Nashville at all. The first quarter of the year was really not good for the sport. There were a couple of fights here and there, a couple storylines. It seemed that everyone's eyes were almost kind of towards McGregor Mayweather as this thing to begin. Like, oh, that's of interest, you know, but your big, their stars have not been, I don't know. I think people really rush to be like, oh, this person's a star now, just hoping that there's some sort of something that catches fire. There's guys and girls that are kind of on the rise in certain spots, but it's interesting that the two sports completely and how they market and how they find guys and how they push and promote and just it's, and again, kind of leading this weekend, I mean, you have Cub Swanson going in there against, I won't say a relative unknown in Artem Lobov, but as far as a casual MMA fan, they may have heard the name before related to Conor McGregor, but probably not. I mean, Swanson, they definitely know, but this is headlining a show in a city that I don't think they've ever been to before, if I remember right. They've been with me once before.
They held an event, I think it was they had the OSP and Glover Teixeira fight there a couple of years ago.
Yes. You're right. So, I mean, it just, and granted, it's an FS1 show, but like, I don't, it just, I just, you know, these new owners are here. At this point, they're not new, but we've never talked to them, heard from them, and so on. I just, these guys are supposed to be star makers, and so far in 2017, there really hasn't feel like they've done a really good job of that. And it's a long filibuster, but just I think in comparison to the NBA, where it seems like anybody can be made into a star, and in the UFC, where you have it's an individual sport, they struggle with that.
Yeah, and I think it goes back a little bit to what I was saying earlier. Like in the NBA, these players are so available, like they're so out there. And in MMA too, I agree that like they're in terms of accessibility, and I think it's a little bit less than it used to be. The fighters are a little more guarded. The managers are a little more guarded, but you can still get interviews with like almost anyone if you go through the proper channels and do it right. Like maybe a Conor McGregor at this point or Ronda Rousey are kind of outliers, but like generally you could pick up the phone, make a few calls, send a few emails or messages, and get on the phone with a UFC champion, and like not too difficult of a work path there. But for the NBA, like these guys are out there all the time, and it's really, and of course it's different because even like a losing team, you can, if their best players out there, you can still push them in a certain way, as opposed to MMA, like you need to be winning and you need to be out there competing consistently to really become that star. It's really hard to go out there and have an absolutely amazing performance that a lot of people want to get behind. And then if you don't fight for another year or 6 months or 8 months or whatever, it's kind of hard to continue that momentum and really form yourself into a star. And then maybe you go out there and you lose the next fight in devastating fashion. Like there's a lot more, I just think, you know, parts that go into play when it comes to trying to go out there and be like a big star in the UFC. But yeah, I agree with you that this year has been rough so far. There hasn't been too much going on. I mean, you can tell just from the engagement with fans on across different websites and forums and different things. Like it's just not on the same level as it was last year and the year before. But we got so many big fights in those points, whether it was, you know, multiple Rousey fights or McGregor fights or whatever the case may be. We haven't really got any of that so far this year. I think it's beginning to take a turn, and that's of course coming pretty soon here. That next UFC card in Dallas, UFC 211, is absolutely amazing. If you look at that card pretty much top to bottom, it's all you could ask for as an MMA fan. But how much does that really sell to the casuals and the people that, you know, new fans of the sport, the people that really take pay-per-views from that 300K range to that 500,000 plus range? I don't know. The heavyweight title is always good for that. It's one of the bigger draws just in and of itself because it is that heavyweight title. But yeah, like there's not been a ton going on lately. And I think, you know, the engagement of the media and the fighters and main events like Cub Swanson and Artem Lobov has kind of been an indictment of that. It's just right now a pretty slow phase in MMA, but that's just the way the sport goes. It's going to happen, you know, many more times in the years to come. You can't have this just peak crazy event after crazy event going forever. It's just the way it works. There's ebbs and flows to this business. And right now we're just in one of those low points where there's not too much going on.
Yeah. It's too bad more people didn't watch last Saturday's Fox show, because that was a tight show. There was lots of, you know, interesting names throughout the show. And we talked about it here last week, but you have, Demetrius Johnson doing his thing in the main event, and I think, you know, that's been talked to death about how underappreciated he is and overlooked he is, and I think that's, you know, I think that's the division's fault as much as anything. I think he's doing his part, but there's just not enough guys there to give him a challenge. He hasn't had the Tim Elliott fight was probably the closest thing I can remember in recent history to him having a really competitive fight. And, you know, he's doing his thing. He's consistently kind of plodding along, doing his thing, but I just think it is what it is. Rose Namajunas, you know, making a relatively short work of Michelle Waterson's second round. I expected that. I just think she's, you know, I think she's really talented. And I think, her versus JJ, Joanna Champion, if she can obviously retain her title against Jessica Andrade, which is no easy task, I think that could be at least a fun fight leading up to it. But, you know, I think in Jacek, I think it's just, obviously she's on a different level. But then Robert Whittaker, I think that was, you know, a real, I would say star making performance, but that was a really, truly standout. Wow. He just took the brass ring and ripped it off the whole carousel type performance. That was really fun. But I mean, the show overall was really good. And I think it's kind of this next wave of fighters is coming. It's just too bad more people didn't watch it.
Yeah, it's a shame. What can we really say? I agree. I think some other journalists out there have kind of echoed this sentiment, but like at this point, the effort in trying to defend Demetrius Johnson, like whether or not he's a draw, and trying to like convince people to be interested in him, is, I think we're beyond that point. Like either you like this guy and you're going to watch his fights and you can appreciate his greatness, or you're not. You are going to be one of the people that comments on the Instagram, you know, accounts being like, this guy's a midget. How can a 5 foot whatever dude be like the best fighter in the world? You know, all these different things that people criticize Demetrius Johnson about, and then just don't like him for very silly reasons. Like, I don't think it's really going to be difficult to change those people's minds at this point. And of course, like, you put him on something like Fox, like, there's always the hope that you get some new people that maybe just come across, you know, the channel because it's network televised, and maybe see this guy and, you know, say, wow, look how amazing this fighter is. You have people like, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard going out there tweeting about how amazing Demetrius Johnson is. Like, so either you can appreciate the guy or you can't, but at this point, he's been the champion for, I believe, almost 5 years now. It'll be 5 years in September. He is going to do his thing. He's not really changing. He's not making any particularly big effort to put himself out there in a unique and different way or make himself especially promotable. And it's not like he has to go out there and do anything crazy, but like, he's just, it's just nothing that has come organically. A lot of these things do. And there's just not a ton there for your casual fan that just wants to see Conor McGregor talk crap and say all these ridiculous things. Like, that's not Demetrius Johnson. It's never going to be. So either you accept him for what he is and the UFC goes about trying to promote him in a different way to get, you know, that bigger push, which, like, I thought they started doing an okay job with in the lead up. They did in the lead up to the Fox card. They put something out on their social. I think they tweeted out or something that was like about his video game obsession and him being on Twitch and everything. And I thought it was really well done, but it's like, that feels like it's a couple years too late at this point. And then you're just tweeting it out. Like, how many people are really even going to see that? Like, how much did you push that? That should have been, you know, maybe the main part of the segment on the countdown show or whatever it may be, or the road to the octagon, whatever they call it for the Fox show. So there's ways, like, I think you can boost his profile a little bit more. And of course, with this title defense thing coming up, he's able to break Anderson Silva's record in his next fight. That's something you can push behind him. Seems like they're now starting to push him a little bit more as, you know, the GOAT, best fighter ever, all these, most dominant champion ever, all these different things. There is little pieces that you can go into trying to push him more, but like, if you ever think Demetrius Johnson is going to be a guy that can headline a pay-per-view and sell 500,000 units, it's just not going to happen. And that's fine. There's always not, like, there's not going to be those guys fighting consistently. Like, you just need to appreciate him for what he is, and the UFC needs to try to maximize his space as best as possible, and hopefully they can see these ratings, which I believe were the second lowest of the 24 Fox shows in total, and see that there is still more ground you can make up there.
Yeah. Unfortunately for him, I think unless he moves up and has a fight against a name, which people are like, this is going to be a truly competitive fight, I just don't think we get there. But you're right. It kind of at this point is what it is. Looking at the kind of the other big stories from this past week before we get to Nashville, we have three that stood out for different reasons. We have Dana White, and take him at face value, saying that basically, it's either going to be this summer, this July, I believe he said. It was either going to be DC versus Jimmy Manoa or DC versus John Jones, depending on what John Jones wants to do, if he wants a tune-up fight or not. So we really don't know what's going on there. We have that story. We have this bizarre fight-fixing story, which kind of bubbled back to the surface with Leo Kuntz and the South Korean fighter as well this week. And then we also had the announcement of the, I believe it's called the Professional Fight League, which is the former World Series of Fighting, or soon to be former, basically trying to do the whole IFL thing starting next year. So three different stories, three different angles. Which of those stood out to you and why?
I think the fight fixing thing is always interesting. Yeah. You, of course, you never want like that, something like that to happen. It's always, I feel like if you're a person covering the sport and you care about like the integrity of MMA, that's one of the worst things that you could possibly have come up. It goes back, you know, we've seen this topic be broached with like Bellator and all these different things with some of the funky main events that they've had. And there hasn't really been any substance to any of those besides people, you know, goofy people on Twitter just saying, you know, pulling out little clips of Tito Ortiz's hands and like slowing it down to super slow motion and saying he tapped out and all this stuff. But
every Bellator main event is fixed, right? Every single one.
Yeah. I mean, it's, but there's nothing to that, right? There's no evidence whatsoever. Right, right. This is a real thing that came up. I believe it was out of South Korea, and they first really put the, a story out that came and eventually caught wind over here, you know, stateside in Canada and everything. And yeah, it's just, it's very interesting to see. I mean, there's so many angles to it that like, what does this really mean? It seems like he ultimately didn't go through with it because of course he won the fight, but it's just like, how many people, like, has this happened before? What's the, you know, common consistency of people maybe even betting on themselves or betting against themselves. It was just very fascinating to see like all the different dynamics to the story, and it's still ongoing. We're going to find out more. And, you know, if Bang is ultimately, you know, proven guilty of doing this, it's of course going to be the end of his career, and it could be even worse because I think there's an actual like law against this kind of stuff in his home country. So yeah, this is going to be a very interesting story to follow going forward. And I think the UFC has done a good job of getting out in front of it. They pretty much right when the story started to come out, they released statements to people that inquired about it being like, you know, we gave these people formal warning. There was no wind that was caught of it when the fight was just about to happen because of that crazy shift in the betting lines that happened hours leading up to the fight. Like, it was a massive, massive shift, something that doesn't happen unless there's some very suspicious activity going on. So yeah, it's just a very compelling story. I mean, I think for the UFC, that's just what you need to make sure more of anything. Like, these things you can't control if what someone is doing in their personal life, and they are, you know, getting themselves into situations where they may or may not be throwing a fight. The UFC, just, they need to keep their integrity more than anything. They need to make sure that there is never any connection between something like this happening and their actual, you know, front office type of thing. Like, they can't have any, be known to have any sort of involvement in this, because of course that could lead to the outright downfall of the promotion. They'd get their promoter's license revoked, all these different things. They would be able to put on fights anymore, and that'd more or less be the end of the UFC. So for this, I hope, you know, the UFC, if there is more development to the story, they come out and maybe Dana White or whomever will be asked about it in an interview. But I'm just curious to see how this develops in the future and just how the UFC handles it, because they need to, you know, tread very carefully on this one and make sure that people who are just going out there reading, you know, the casual type of people that see a headline fixed UFC fight, and they need to make those people aware that they had nothing to do with this personally. It was something that was involved, you know, with the fighter and their situation that was going on outside of the octagon.
Yeah, it's a bizarre story. Dave Meltzer talked about it a little bit last night on our airwaves, talking about just it's very strange. So yeah, definitely go look that up on MMA Junkie and obviously other sites as well. I think the would be great. And I hearken back to the NBA and thinking about guys like Adam Silver, who does, you know, regular press conferences and interviews and so on. Is for Dana White is transparency, right? And I think that he can be anti-media and kind of do this whole thing that, you know, his whole shtick that he's been doing for a long time. But I think you're right. At points in a company's life cycle and as they grow, you got to get out ahead of some things and not just talk to like Colin Cowherd, right? You got to like talk to the media and answer some questions. And they've done a horrendous job of doing that in a lot of cases. And I hearken back to this. You know, the John Jones, if it was a TRT or the elevated testosterone levels back for the Belfort fight. That whole thing happened and they never really fully addressed that ever. You know, that was pretty bad. But things like this, you're right. I mean, fight fixing. We know that we live in a world of headlines where people don't read stories. They just read a headline and they choose to make their opinion from that, whether or not it's, you know, quote unquote, hashtag fake news or anything else. That's their thing, right? So you're right. If all of a sudden casual sports fans, this gets picked up in a couple ways and people see, oh, UFC fixed fights. If they're kind of on the fence about the sport anyway, you know that their mind goes to, oh, everything's fixed. It's just like boxing. Everything's fixed there too and blah, blah, blah. And then that whole wildfire spreads. But this is a fight with two guys that, you know, I think most fans probably couldn't pick out of a lineup if they needed to in a fight that happened almost 18 months ago. So, yeah, I hope that they get in front of this and really just, to your point, just squash it and get all the details, squash it and you know, talk about why this thing, you know, doesn't exist throughout the sport. And I think maybe we're being a little naive to think it's never happened before, but they have to do their best job to squash this as best as possible and get out in front of it.
Absolutely. And I hope that at some point in the coming weeks, whenever Dana White does his next bit of media rounds, that, you know, hopefully someone that outside of, like you said, the Colin Cowherds or, you know, whomever that's going to just give him softballs for 8 minutes or 10 minutes or however long their interview goes on. But to Dana White's credit, you know, the past however many events, whether it's a Fox event or a pay-per-view, he has come out to the post-fight press conference and he has spoke to the media and answered every single one of our questions, which is something which was not happening for almost several years there at one point. He hasn't brought back the pre-fight scrums or anything. I think he did one a few months ago. I can't remember which event it was before, maybe 208 or yeah, I think it was 208 or something. And he did sit there for like an hour and answer questions. And I think the next time that opportunity is brought up, I'm assuming it won't be this weekend because it's, you know, one of those smaller shows that Dana probably is going to be traveling to, but in Dallas in a couple of weeks, hopefully if there's a chance for someone that's, you know, more the hardcore MMA media, I guess you could call it, that he will be asked about this. And I'd be very curious to know what his answer will be. Maybe it'll be complete fluff. Maybe he'll just say, you know, are looking into it as ongoing. Maybe he'll just, you know, completely no sell and give you nothing. But I would be curious what his official stance on this is, and, you know, whether he says this guy's never welcome back here, or if he's already not welcome back, whatever goes on. It's just it's still a story that is very much developing. And I think we haven't really heard the end of this quite yet.
Before we get to Nashville, would you rather see a card with Daniel Cormier versus Jimmy Manoa on top and John Jones versus light heavyweight X, or would you rather get right to it and see DC John Jones 2 this summer?
I think let's get right to it. I know as we are speaking here, I think Ariel Helwani just reported over on MMA Fighting not too long ago that Jones and Cormier is targeted for UFC 214, which I believe is July 29th in Anaheim. So it looks like they're going in that direction. But personally, assuming that hasn't been official or nothing's official yet and they're still in the process of figuring it out, that is the fight that I want to see. I think it makes all the sense in the world. Actually, coincidentally enough, I was watching John Jones's post-fight press conference from after the Aubin St. Preux fight just a couple days ago. And if you really listen to what he's saying, I know there's an argument for all the time he's had off, only one fight, and I think it's almost like 2.5 years now or something like that. There is an argument to be made for what we call a tune-up fight, and you know, maybe he could fight a Patrick Cummins or like that type of character, someone in the 10 to 15 range at light heavyweight. But right now, like if you actually listen back to what he was saying, I know that St. Preux performance was far from excellent, but he was saying that I have been training for pretty much this entire time off to fight Daniel Cormier. Like if I was fighting Daniel Cormier tonight, I think I would have destroyed him, because all the effort I put in through this entire training camp has been for Daniel Cormier, for the openings that he's going to give, for the style that he brings. And Aubin St. Preux was pretty much the complete antithesis of what Daniel Cormier is a fighter. He's tall, he switches stances, he's like, throws a lot of kicks, those kind of things. So I can understand Jones taking that fight on whatever it was, like less than 2 weeks' notice or something, that he was not able to put together the complete game plan. And maybe you're the type of person that says, you know, no matter what, his skill level is so high that he should have gone in there and, you know, destroyed OSP anyways. But just if you're thinking about the amount he has to lose, I can understand why he put on that performance, but it just kept coming back over and over that if he was fighting Daniel Cormier, he would have been so ready. And I think he still is ready for that fight. He's had even more time now, gone through another full training camp for Cormier for their fight at UFC 200, which of course did not happen. But I think John Jones, like if it was maybe someone else, a fresh opponent, something like that, who was the champion and he was coming back to fight, maybe you look at things differently. But with Cormier, he's already fought him once. I think he feels very prepared and in tune to have this fight now. So let's just go ahead and get it over with. And let's say, like, if you're looking at the UFC, like, my thought would be if John Jones is going to lose a fight, like maybe they put him in some tune-up fight or whatever and he loses that one, that would be absolutely devastating. But if he is going to lose, why not put him back in this fight? And then he can lose to Daniel Cormier, and then they have the trilogy. And that's probably arguably the biggest fight ever in UFC history. So like, if he's going to go in there and he's going to lose his next fight, let's have it be to Daniel Cormier. And then you can keep going with this rivalry moving forward, because Cormier said he does want to beat him twice to really prove his point. So that's the ideal situation. If Jones wins, he's back on top. And you know, we're where we were a couple years ago, I believe, you know, back in January 2015 or so, after he beat Cormier the first time. So in my opinion, doing this fight right now, not as a pretty much more or less of a lose-lose. I mean, of course, Jones would be devastated to have a loss on his record and be defeated in that fight. But if you look at it in the big picture, in terms of, you know, the amount of fights you could put on going forward and all the different things you could do, this seems like the best thing to do at this point.
Yep. I would agree with that as well. And I think UFC is at a point now, we just talked about a pretty bad first quarter, and you know, they need to make some money, and they need, we all know why. You might as well just not mess around and just go for the big fights when you can. And we think back to the Strikeforce days when, you know, it's like, just make Fedor versus Alistair Overeem, and let's not mess around with the brackets and things like that. And we see what happens. These best laid plans often go astray. And we see what happens when in the fight game, these things, you know, they never go as planned, it seems. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think go with a rematch as soon as possible. And then, you know, if Jim Manuel is meant to have a title shot, let it be maybe later in the year or at some other point. But, yeah, I would agree with that. But we'll go to this weekend's show, and as I mentioned, a little bit kind of, you know, overlooked because of the main event doesn't exactly have, you know, marquee written all over it. However, and I mentioned this about last week's show too, there is a lot of fights on here which involve interesting names, and that to me, you know, helps me, it helps stand out. You know, just kind of guys like, I love crossroad fights. I love fights, you know, where they're at in their career, especially some of these guys on the show that are closer to the end than the beginning, but they're still kind of hanging on. And there's a lot of interesting names, especially at this on the main card portion. And I'm just going to go over a few names, and I want to ask you who you're most excited to see in terms of kind of how things play out. We have Cub Swanson. Al Iaquinta finally returns after a very long layoff, a little contract dispute, which really didn't get settled that much in his favor. But regardless, he's fighting in the co-main event against Diego Sanchez. Ovin St. Preux is back. John Dodson fighting against Eddie Wineland, a fight that's kind of being overlooked. Joe Lauzon, obviously a fan favorite at lightweight, is back, taking on Stevie Ray. And to open up the main card portion of the show on FS1, Jake Ellenberger versus Platinum Mike Perry, always interesting there. And also you have Talis Latish, Sam Alvey. There's so interesting names throughout. Alexis Davis is fighting on the show. Out of everyone on the card, give me a few names that you're really interested in seeing what happens to him on Saturday night.
I'm definitely interested in the Iaquinta Sanchez fight. Before I get into that, I mean, I think just going off the point you made, definitely a lot of interesting names. Like, look at going from the bottom up, Alexis Davis, Jessica Penne, Talis Latis, John Dodson, Ovin St. Preux, all people who have competed in UFC championship fights before. So, and Eddie Wineland as well. So yes, you look at all those names, those are people that have either been at the top of the marquee, headline pay-per-views, co-main event, big Fox shows, all those different kind of things. So there is names that people, if you are just a casual fan, you should probably spot one or two out of there. So yeah, there's some really good fights on this card. And I know the main event may leave a fair bit to be desired, but still, should be a good fight, even if Cub Swanson goes out there and destroys Artem Lobov. I mean, who doesn't like watching, as Cub Swanson calls, the beautiful destruction? So why not, you know, put that fight out there? It can be maybe a little bit of a showcase fight for Cub Swanson, who's going to be probably the next title contender or very close to the top of the line after Max Holloway and Jose Aldo do their thing in June at UFC 212. But yeah, I like that Iaquinta Sanchez fight. Diego Sanchez, always interesting. This is his 26th UFC appearance. I believe If this fight goes to decision, he'll have more than 6 hours of cage time and just be like, I think, the second person along with Frankie Edgar to cross that 6 hour mark of UFC competition. So yeah, a guy like Sanchez, the fact that he is still sticking around and fighting a guy like Iaquinta, who he's fallen down, I think, to like 14 or 15 in the UFC's official rankings at this point. But before he had the long layoff after that Masvidal win, he was, I believe, a fair bit higher than that, somewhere in the top 10. So he's a guy that, like, unless he during this 2 years off, like, fell off a complete cliff in terms of, you know, competitive ability, which doesn't really seem like it would happen because he's still a young enough guy who is with a very good camp. And I know he was doing the real estate thing and maybe not 100% dedicating himself to training, and he was injured during part of that time too. So I'm curious to see him coming back to the cage, what he's going to look like in this fight against Sanchez, who we know is one of the toughest dudes to ever step foot in the octagon. He's not going to be easily put away, even if he just takes a complete beating for 3 rounds. So yeah, but if you are Sanchez, this one is really your chance to capitalize and like really jump into that top 15 range and become a relevant lightweight again all these years after he challenged BJ Penn for the title, like in 2009 or something. So it's an interesting crossroads fight for both these guys. If Sanchez can win, he's, you know, suddenly relevant again. If Iaquinta wins, he's on a 5-fight winning streak and is a guy that really needs to be taken seriously in that lightweight division. So that's a really fun fight. And then behind that, I really like the Dodson and Wineland fight because Those two guys are just going to try to punch each other's heads off, and they're going to do it at a lightning quick rate. So yeah, don't blink during that fight.
In this era of surprise retirements, as we saw recently with Anthony Rumble Johnson and Patrick Cote, you know, now I'm kind of looking over every card and being like, Hans, who could possibly retire on this show? I think the candidates, if they were, and again, they really haven't hinted toward this, but you kind of look at length in the sport, is you look at Diego Sanchez. Again, he could be one of those guys who's like, I'm done, even though I don't really see that happening. And then I also look at Joe Lauzon, who has been in the sport for a long, long time. You know, way, way back fighting against, oh my God, who did he debut?
Jens Pulver.
That's right. Way.
2006, way. September, yeah. 2006.
Oh my God. So long ago, right? So 11 years ago. And he's, you know, he's a guy that he's nowhere near title contention. He's still fan favorite, obviously, as I mentioned, and people like seeing him fight, but you know, haven't really seen the best of him as of late. And you kind of wonder. He's got business interests outside the cage. He obviously has his academy, and just, you know, a really smart guy, and someone that you could see being like, you know, maybe he's just kind of like, huh, maybe I'm good with this. If he has a loss against Stevie Ray, that could happen. Again, it's tough to say, but I think with some of these guys, we're starting this. There's definitely a group of UFC talent that is a lot closer to the end than the beginning. And I think we're going to start to see more and more of these retirements and people being like, I've spent a long time in the sport and I'm just going to call it good. So I think my picks to click, if there's going to be any surprise retirements, Joe Lauzon number one and Diego Sanchez number two.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think Joe Lauzon has kind of, he actually did an interview with John Morgan from MMA Junkie down in Nashville this week, kind of talking about this. He was asked how much time he has left. And I think really, you look at his past two fights, like he should have won that Jim Miller fight. He should have lost the Marcin Held fight. The results were kind of reversed in that one. He ended up coming out on the wrong end and right end of split decisions there. But I think he's a guy that, as he was pretty much self-admitted, he knows that his time is coming to an end. He doesn't feel like it's right now. And I think a guy like Joe Lauzon would probably stick around until he suffers like a really blowout, devastating kind of loss, whether he's like knocked out pretty quickly into the fight or submitted, whatever the case may be, something like that. I think it's going to need a bit of a stamp on it for him to really decide that, okay, I've had enough of this stuff and decide to walk away. But if he's staying in these competitive fights with, you know, frankly, some really solid names, you know, yeah, Marcin Held, Jim Miller, stopped Diego Sanchez quickly, like just a few months ago at UFC 200. So he's a guy that is still, despite, I think this is his 25th UFC fight, has still really hung in there and can compete against the best guys. So, but yeah, it's really hard to say. Like we just saw Anthony Johnson retire after a UFC championship fight main event, completely out of the blue, and retirement has been a common theme. And it's funny that you actually bring that up, because I have, throughout this year, I've been noticing this, and I've been keeping a list of all the fighters that have announced their retirement so far this year. I can read it out to you if you'd like. I'd have it in front of me, but it's getting pretty lengthy, and we're only in April. So I'll start from the very beginning. It was early January. We had Mirko Krokop, and then Tim Kennedy, Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, Tito Ortiz, Ashlyn Daly, Ricardo Abreu, Cody Bollinger, James Runtastri, Brock Lesnar, Felipe Nover, Cody Pfister, Marlos Konan, Nam Phan, Ian Entwistle, Brad Pickett, Patrick Cote, Anthony Johnson, and then just within the past 24 hours or so, Miguel Torres.
Mm. Wow.
So that's 18 fighters right there. And we're only, you know,
April,
just trending towards the end of April. So I think we are going to see a lot more of this coming. We are in that sport, you know, in this stage, like you said, the guys that, at least for me, right when I really started following the sport, 2005, 2006-ish, and I think a lot of the fans that maybe follow the UFC now, I guess you could, I think we're past the term tough noobs, but if you want to call them, you know, if you want to call them that still, those type of fans who were first really brought into the sport by the ultimate first few seasons of the Ultimate Fighter, those people who were introduced at that stage, that's 10, 11, 12 years ago, that's what we see a career really go through. And I think we're seeing those people that were really at their peak in that area or just coming up in that time, they're reaching the end at that point, which makes sense. It's been a very long time. It's been more than a decade, but yeah, I think we're going to see this exodus continue to happen over this next year or two. And it's going to be really the new generation flocking in.
Yep. I would agree. And I think once the idea kind of permeates in someone's head, you know, I think maybe they may see one of their, you know, fellow fighters on TV calling it quits, and they're like, huh, and maybe that just sticks and they're like, I've been thinking about this and maybe it's time. And I just wonder if that kind of blossoms. And there's, you know, look at the heavyweight division. You look at, I mean, you just look at every single division, UFC and Bellator. I mean, there's guys, and obviously in other, you know, World Series of Fighting as well, there's guys that we've seen fight on our TV screens for years and years and years and years and years. This isn't, you know, it's not tennis. It's a very violent sport. And after a while, you know, if they're like, look, my earning potential is kind of a little bit limited at this point if I want to keep putting my body through this. And again, not to say anything for these people that, you know, have done wrestling throughout their careers or maybe boxing at a young age or things like that where their body's just been physically put through a ringer for 15, you know, 16, 20 years plus. And they're like, you know what, I'm good. And I think it, you bring that up with the list. I think between this year and next year, I think it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot of names, and hopefully UFC and frankly Bellator is ready to kind of be like, all right, here's the next crop. And I think we all are kind of ready for it at some point, because at some point you kind of like there's nowhere else to go for some of these fighters, and they're just kind of there, you know. And that's, it's kind of sad to see, but again, for a lot of these fighters, it's kind of like, what do you do when you retire at age 32 or 33, or in some cases younger than that? And I think that's reality for a lot of these athletes is, you know, if they don't make life-changing money, which a lot don't, it's like, what do you do at that point?
Yeah. And you need to be smart. It goes, and if we can want to bring it for full circle now back to UFC Nashville, Ally Quinta, he was basically ready to retire from the sport. He, during his contract dispute with the UFC, he said, I'm going to go do this real estate thing. And he's stuck with it. I think it really gave him the awareness that this fighting thing isn't going to keep cash in my pockets for the rest of my life. Like, what am I going to do beyond this? And he was even saying during, I think it was the open workout scrum or something today, that he was still working. He's still doing the job, and he was working today. He said before he came over to the open workouts, he was on the phone closing a deal. So like this guy, he's like, I realized that like I need to have something to fall back on. And I think a lot of these people are going to have to start formulating the same plan and realizing that they really need to have a strong exit plan for the sport. And I think it's going to be sad to see, like, we're going to see a lot of these retirements, whether they come from fighters who have stuck around too long or getting out too early. But right now, I think we're in that stage where we're going to find out some of the extremely harsh realities about MMA as a sport, because we, you know, it's getting to that point where it's been around long enough, and we're going to see what happens to these people that have like a significant post-fight life. Are they able to cope with how they're living? Like, look at someone like BJ Penn. Like, I don't think he was capable of living the life of just not being a fighter anymore. And that's why we've seen him come back to the sport once again, why we're seeing him continue to stick around after getting absolutely destroyed by Yair Rodriguez a few months ago. Like, a lot of these people don't know anything else in life. And it's sad in a way. It's, you know, you can look up to it in a way that they're so passionate about something, they center their entire life around it. But once that's gone, like, this fighting doesn't last forever, and they need to become aware of that. And hopefully we can just, as these retirements continue to happen, we see graceful exits from the sport and not, you know, very sad ones or, you know, potentially even worse things happening. So I guess it's just a wait and see game, but this is something that our job as media, we're going to have to be covering this and really, you know, try to tell the stories of, you know, post-fight life, because I think it's going to be just as important as the actual career.
Well put. A good point to end on. Before we let you go, want to give you a chance to plug any, obviously, where to follow you on Twitter, any other social media stories you have coming up. The floor is yours.
Yeah, just follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Both of them, Mike Bohn MMA, MikeBohn MMA. You know, doing lots of, obviously, UFC coverage. We have a couple weeks off coming up after this one, but then we get back into it with a pretty strong stretch starting from 2/11 till looks like mid or the end of the summer. And then, of course, I'll be doing the NBA coverage as well for USA Today. I guess we'll see about these Raptors. If it's just going to be a few more days of that, or next round we get 4 weeks of basketball here in Toronto. But yeah, that's just basically what's going on with me right now, and I really appreciate you having me on once again. And hopefully before the next one, we don't have to wait too long again. So it's always great catching up with you, and I appreciate the platform to come chat.
Hey, anytime. And obviously, if my Celtics get swept and your Raptors get bounced, we can commiserate and drink some virtual beers together or something like that. It'd be a long summer till the draft comes, my friend. But we'll see what happens till we get there. But Mike Bohn, thanks so much for joining Josh Chase's Punch Out. It's been a lot of fun.
Anytime. Thanks, man.
All right. Big thanks to Mike Bond for stopping by, dropping by for about an hour or so. And, you know, again, I think we will be commiserating pretty soon about the Celtics and the Raptors. So, you know, if you see Conan out there, my man Conan, big Celtics fan, console him if they do get bounced this weekend, and console me as well, and just wish us well. Sean Grandy, obviously, you know, former past guest on the show, and, you know, we'll all be drinking some virtual beers together. And for those that don't care the NBA, we can just move on and talk about the fights again instead. So let's see. So we also have a Bellator show coming up on Friday night as you're listening to this, and I am actually going to do this live. List the Bellator events. Let's see. Coming up tonight, we have, let's see, it is April 21st. Oh, from the Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. That's somewhat close by. Oh, that's right. This is the fourth time that Daniel Strauss, the featherweight champion of Bellator, is taking on Patricio Pitbull Freire. And Strauss has not fought in a very long time. He has not fought since November 6, 2015. And as we said at the beginning of the show, it is April 21st, 2017. That is a long time. And he fought against Patricio Pitbull. Wow, imagine that. He has actually fought against Pitbull this will make three out of his last four fights. Oh, boy. I don't know. I get frustrated with this type of stuff because, like, can you get other fighters in there, please? Like, let's build up this division a little bit. It's been a long time. So hopefully, they have been doing a little bit. They have AJ McKee opening up the main card of the show at featherweight. And let's get some more activity. I feel like featherweight, put it this way, it's been so long I forgot all about kind of their featherweight division. And that's unfortunate. And again, we just had a show last weekend. Why can't we just combine some of these smaller shows? All respect to Ryan Quinn versus Syed Awad. I really don't need to see that. You know, the second fight from the top or third fight from the top. There's a women's flyweight fight in the co-main event. I don't know. You guys have heard me talk about this before. Less shows, more impact, please. And there is they have a 10 card. And here's the thing. As I kind of look through, so you've heard about this, I don't remember what the phrase is, the Fab Five, I think they're using with some of these young guys like Terrell Fortune. So he's fighting on the spike.com prelims. Ed Ruth is fighting on the spike.com prelims. Wouldn't you rather see those guys fight on a main show? Or I don't know. I still really wonder about their whole plan, and I don't know. That stuff frustrates me. Less shows, but let's get some of those younger, more impact guys a little bit more screen time. That's what I'll say about that. But it is that's happening on free. And again, stuff on free TV, I guess you can't complain about too much, even though we want to do that. So we have USC Nashville coming up on Saturday, and then we are off until May 13th, and that is UFC 211. That's the mega show coming up in the Dallas, Texas. That's the Miocic Junior Dos Santos. She actually heard Mike talk about this. Ioane and Jacek taking on Jessica Andrade and a slew of other fights in that show. So we'll be talking about that a lot coming up on that week. And maybe we'll go a little bit off the map next week and do something a little bit different since there's no shows really of note. So we're going to call it good there. Big thanks to all you guys for hanging in. Thanks for your support. Thanks for your tweets. If you guys are enjoying the show, feel free to tweet me anytime at Josh Nason, JOSHNASON. I always appreciate people saying that they like the show, they listen to the show. Even if you don't like it or you wish I asked something else, let me know. I certainly appreciate it, and any feedback I get helps out a lot, especially if there's other guests out there you think maybe I should talk to at some point. I do have kind of a list I'm trying to get through, but certainly, you know, send me suggestions anytime. You can also email me, josh@wrestlingobserver.com. And that's going to do it for this week. Thanks to Mike Bond. Thanks to all of you. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.